The following podcast is a part of RadioMisfits.com.
Welcome to Misfits Making It. We're oddballs and we're doing cool stuff. I'm your host, Lauren LaJudice. This is the podcast version of the comedy shows that I host around New York City and the road, the Misfit Variety Show, and everything I do down in the Capiche Club Misfit Comedy Space in Little Italy. So yeah, Misfit, how's it going? I've been super excited. We've recorded so many wonderful podcasts, and this is a big month because I'm bringing the Misfit Variety Show down to Washington, D.C., and we also have another show in New York City on September 23rd. So, you know, it's a lot of, like, big steps, and it's scary, but recording this podcast has helped because I've gotten so much good medicine from hearing the stories of other people doing different things, like blazing their own trail, and hearing their stories gives me a lot of strength. So I'm just super grateful for this podcast. This is the first episode. It's going to be, oh my God, so chock full of inspiration for you and stories to like make you feel like it is possible. Another way is possible. Before we go on to our interview with Kevin Albions, here are a few things you could do to support the podcast. You can rate and review. Now, Misfits really trust what other Misfits have to say. So if you have something to say about the podcast, we'd love to hear it. And we'll for sure shout you out on the show. You can sign up at laurenlogi.com, Lauren, L-O-G-I, and to get the latest and greatest on what's going on in the Misfit world. Or you could sponsor a podcast so that we can put out podcasts more often. We're being published once a week for 6 weeks, the first 6 weeks, and then we're going to every other week. Unless someone wants to sponsor a podcast, then sure, we will post as many times as you need us to. So if you go to laurenlogi.com and click on listen and podcast, you can contact us through there. It's super accessible for individuals and a nice birthday gift, if I might say so myself. All right, now let's get to the interview with Kevin Albions. Kevin is an absolute legend. And if you know him, you're squealing with delight that he's on the podcast. And if you don't, you know him, you just don't realize that you do. Kevin is someone who's like blazed the trail for you and you're walking it. You just didn't realize who had done it. He has conquered the 90s gay dance scene. He has at least 2 number one dance hits, Alive and Give It Up. He shared the stage with legends such as Whitney Houston, Cher, and Madonna. And his songs Cunty and Rhythm Is My Bitch are legendary. In fact, none other than Beyonce just sampled Cunty on her track, Pure Honey. So Kevin truly embodies what it means to make your own thing, sing your song, and I'm so psyched to have him on here. Without further ado, here is my interview. Thank you, the Kevin Albions, queen of the queens, of all queens everywhere, for coming on Misfits Making It. I worked at Restaurant Florent during the last days.
Wow.
And
that was a legend.
Yeah, legend. And I worked the overnight shift as a host, and I would do drag, different characters, drag queen, drag king every night. Uh-huh. And everyone there was like, you must listen to these songs. And they would replay your music a lot, a lot. And so that's how I first came to know your work. It was essential listening for anyone trying to do art in New York City of all kinds.
Apparently so, you know. It's so funny, you know, when you're on that end of it, you know, you develop, you're making stuff and everything. And then you find out these stories about how your colleagues or peers or whoever is listening to your music, and you don't really get the sense of like how much music you're actually putting out, how much your music. It's different when you're putting music out and you're selling stuff, and it's different when you're putting music out and it actually is, people are actually listening to it, and you don't really know, you're not really gauging anything on how your popularity is going because it's underground, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, you know, I mean, I was doing well with the music. I knew that it was selling. Everything was great. But it's just, you know, at the same time, it's one of those things where you don't really know. You know what I mean? How things are in my management at the time. Everything just was so sloppy. So, I mean, I'm not trying to say I was perfect when it came to, you knowing everything. Because I really wasn't. I just put stuff out and did, you know, it became number one and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you just don't know still. You know what I mean? You don't know. So apparently I did something right. You know?
Absolutely. Then I bumped into your friend, Daniel Resnick, someone you know from back in the day.
Well, actually grew up together.
Amazing.
In high school, so.
And she was waxing on about how what an amazing person you are. So it was like, I know you as an artist, and you also go well recommended by someone I know through Instagram as just like an amazing human.
Right. So yeah, we grew up together. She was the lesbian that lived in Richmond, and she was always the same person, never changed. And you know, we've gotten older and everything. And we have a mutual friend between us, my best friend Beth Owen, between us. So that's how we reconnected with each other.
I love it. And what do you think? I mean, how have you kept yourself, like, your good person heart? How have you kept that through all of your art making, all throughout your career?
Well, God is very, very prevalent in my life from beginning to from back then to even now. As a good natured person, I don't know if I would say that, because I've made some really bad decisions and done some really things that are just like, you know, no one's perfect. But somehow, you navigate this whole process, and you really, I guess they'll determine whether you're good or bad at the end of the whole round of of the life, right? So what I try to do is to at least hear people and to realize everyone's experience is different, and to know that their experience with you is different. Not everybody has the same experience with you that everyone has. So you try to be at least a little bit from what you were to now. I mean, you have to hold on to something, right? And you have to, like, you have to just be good. You know what I mean? You have to be, if you're bad, you're bad. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just, you can't change that. You know what I mean? You can make it better, make yourself better. But, you know, you're good. When you're good, you're good. You know what I mean? I'm not a bad person. It's just, I just go through a lot of drama.
Well, the world gives you drama, and you got to deal with it.
No, you have to deal with it. You have to be, you know, there's a way of dealing with things, and being your character, I guess, is important. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, I have no regrets, but I also know that you could be better, you know what I mean? And wherever you are in life. So,
yeah. In one of your interviews, you said in the beginning you weren't there. What did you mean by that?
Oh, girl, I was lit, girl. That's what I mean. I was lit and just living the very life of being a black gay man in New York City, and all the accoutrements that came with it. And thank God I can stand here in front of you, be here in front of you right now to just even have an interview. It'd be really different if I didn't make it, because I wouldn't be here right now. So when I say about presence, I mean that I was there, but my mind, body, and soul was really weirded out. So, you know, it's just, it's like, you take yourself on these journeys, and sometimes just you're picking up things along the way, and you just have to, like, you know, straight up and fly right sooner or later, you know? Mm-hmm. Especially if you're 55, 54. So, right. 54, like, you know, you don't want to be like you were when you were 25. You know what I mean? I can't. I won't make it again, girl.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I was there during, like, the last days of the tunnel. I feel like I, my older friends were Gen X and having all the fun. And then finally, when I was, like, old enough to join them, it was, like, all ending. Everything was, I was there at the end of the tunnel, the end of Florent, like, the end of...
It's so funny. I thought I had a curse on me, because every club I worked at, they all closed. So I was like, it got really bad for me. Like, really, like, mentally, I was like, bro, am I the queen to close everything down? Like, every club, I was like, started to rain in, even from Boy Bar down, they all closed. And I was just like, going, what the is going on here? You know what I mean? It was really bad. It was just like Palladium and Tunnel, and it's just really weird. There's Roxy, you know. They all closed down while I was still, you know, raining coops. So it was kind of like weird for me. Very strange, yeah. You know.
Where did the party go after that?
I don't know, girl. Brooklyn.
Yeah, because it's like now it's Brooklyn. Yeah.
Yeah, I left New York. During that transition, I left New York, went to Florida. I had to go work on myself, so. Yeah.
Wow. Where in Florida were you?
I was in Fort Lauderdale for almost 6 years.
Wow. I wonder if you know my cousin. Well, definitely. Yeah. My cousin's a big gay down there. Yeah. Victor Moro. Yeah.
Yes. I love Victor. Yes. Little short Victor.
Yes, Victor. Yeah.
The girl, I knew Victor very well, girl.
Yeah, he's my cousin. Yeah.
Wow. So there is pretty on his side.
Oh, so funny.
I hate you for that one, girl. Hi, Victor, girl. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I see him when I go down. Sometimes I'll go down to like the Miami area to do some comedy and hang out during the winter a bit. Get away from New York, and then I'll go see him. He has in his freezer, he has like slices of Brooklyn pizza, as I'm sure you know these things about him.
So funny. Oh my God.
I love him. Yeah. So funny. So you're in Florida, and what you went there to go work on yourself, I guess, when it was like.
After my beating. So I was beaten and almost killed. Really beaten and almost killed.
Right.
So.
After the hate crime. Yeah.
Right. So I went there to do a gig. This is after my 5 month of having my mouth wired shut and stuff. And I got a couple of gigs and stuff like that. I went to Florida and my best girl, a good girlfriend of mine named AD, who was the founder and developer of Stila Makeup. And she sold it at Estee Lauder. She saw me and she was like, you're going to be dead in a year if you don't stay here with me. I was like, she said, I know you and I know this. She said, you'll be dead in a year. And I was like, AD, what are you talking about? She goes, you have to stay. You have to give yourself a break and just breathe a little bit. And just like, well, to make a long story short, she's not around with us anymore. And little did I know this girl, I felt like she gave me life to like be able to like deal with what I had to deal with. Myself to beauty school at the time and just kind of like met these amazing black island girls that really helped to reshape me again. And I'm so grateful to these girls, this beauty school that I went to during this time. And they really showed me how to respect myself again and I know it sounds really strange, but something about being around a bunch of black women really, it gave me a piece of home and I felt very protected. I felt very, they just wrapped their arms around me and just kind of like gave me a purpose just to even live. And so started doing black hair, which they hate to say, like, mm-hmm. I can do hair, yes. But then in Fort Lauderdale, there's a difference. I can do hair with anyone. I can do anybody's hair. But I worked in a black salon doing black hair, which is a whole other drama in Florida. Mm-hmm. And it was very dramatic hair. And so I loved it. And it just kind of like gave me such a purpose and a sense of like what I could do with my hands without being Kevin Obvious, a drag queen or a performer or whatever. And I just felt really, I felt like I was coming back to myself and rightfully so I did. And it was amazing and stuff like that. And to the point that I realized that it was time for me to go back to, come back to New York. My hips had given out on me. You know, I used to wear stiletto heels 24 hours a day and, comes to find out I had a lot of wear and tear on my hips. My hips were like, when you look at the x-ray, they look like coral reefs. And wow. So getting your hips done in Florida is like, you know, I didn't have insurance. Da, 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 da. And in New York, it was a different story if I just had a, you know, address, you know what I mean? So I came back to New York and got my address and then was able to get my surgery done within, you know, 6 months after going back to New York. And then they had two surgeries done a year apart. And so during that time, I just like got myself together, got myself back on that pole, I guess. Mm-hmm. And pandemic happened. And that's when I cocooned myself and came out and said I was not going into this thing. I was going to do something to myself, cocoon myself and come out as a butterfly. You know what I mean? And that's what I did to put myself through school with DJing and took some online classes and just got the equipment and just sat up in his house and just redeveloped myself and repositioned my whole alignment with the universe. Little did I know what I was doing was exactly that, aligning up with the universe and forgiving myself and just allowing myself to breathe. And, you know, when you had such a big life that I had, and then and to have it all chopped away from you like that. People have no idea what I was doing at that time with no management, with nobody telling me what to do. I was doing so much and this beating happened and it just took it all away. And so I just, you know, I was like the little engine that could not do anything or could not even fix anything. And so I had to leave. And by leaving, allowing myself and being okay with that was such a big thing for me. And to come back, I was good. I did what I did. I don't care. You know what I mean? That's whatever. But whatever happens, happens, is what I was saying. And that's not so healthy to say something like that. And then what do I mean? Whatever happens, happens. What does that mean? What does that actually mean? I ended up being like a statistic or a story. And, you know, I had to stop saying like that. So I kept separating Kevin from Eric Sneed to Kevin Aviance, and that wasn't healthy. So here I am. I'm making conditions. I have conditions. I'm all this mental stuff happening, which I never had before. It was really a mess, you know? And then finally, like, I forgave myself for not being what everybody thought I was going to be or what I was going to be or like and everything. And I just said, you know, I'm not dead. You know, it's about your universe. You know what I mean? When you get in love, universe, what is there set for you is already set for you. It's already there. You just gotta stop fighting against it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Stop fighting against it. And you know, the lessons you're gonna learn, you're still gonna learn more lessons, but it's not gonna be so like dramatic anymore. It's like either get with the program or not. You know?
Right. How do you get with the program? Like, how do you stop worrying? And
you have to just put those shoes on and start walking. You know what I mean? You can't go back. You can't fix what you've already done, but you have control of your future. You have control of what you want. You have control of that. And I always say, you know, I always say I don't have much empathy for other people when it comes to their problems. And it's bad because when you're a club kid, it's like you have to really worry about yourself. You know what I mean? And it gets so selfish. At the end of the day, that all that stuff becomes very minute and you're left there with your character and you. And, you know, I just had to like, just put one foot in front of the other and do it and stop trying to, because apparently I did the work. You know what I mean? I did the work.
So
allow myself to let the work be and let it flourish. I was really kind of stopping it from ever growing. You know what I mean? And then with that pandemic, it gave me such a break to just breathe. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People did not come. My best friend died during a lot of friends. I had 20 some friends that passed away during that time. So, you know, I not from just COVID, but from other things. So it was very like it all the soul searching, drama, cleansing, all this stuff was going on with me during the pandemic. It was really, really rough all at one time. And then here I am now today going, what the hell is going on? You know what I mean? Like, wow. You know? This is like, and it happens. That's what happens when you put the work in. This is what happens when you put the work in. You got to recognize it and you can't stop your satellite from beaming. You can't stop it. You know, when you do the work, this is what happens, you know, and then you got to be ready for that. You have to be ready.
Yeah. Well, what's the work? Like, what would you, cause it seems one thing it seems when you're saying the work is that you've, like in times of crisis, going back to like a class or some sort of educational setting has been like
that's one way of working. Another work is like, you know, all the music I put out beforehand, you know, for number ones, several top tens, you know, all that stuff. That's the work. That's my dossier. You know what I mean? And so where you think you're going to make it, it's not about making it. It's about being consistent, I think. That's what it's about. You have to be consistent about what you're doing when you're doing the work. You know what I mean? And you can't really worry about what people have to say. You can't really worry about, you just keep going. Why are you so frustrated? And because we all want to be the it girl. We all want to be that child, you know, we all want to find out. But what goes up comes down. If you accept that, fine. It's not the end of the world. And just because you're down doesn't mean that it's going to be no more. That's not the truth. Age has got such a bad rep for being older. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm older now. I'm 22. Yeah. I'm not 22. Yeah. I'm never going to be 22. I'm never going to be that size again. I'm never going to look like that again. And it's okay. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
We as gay men, we don't know that because all our forefathers died. We have nobody to look up to that's older. They're all dead. Mm. So it's kind of like, What does that look like? What does that picture look like? Who has the handbook for that? No one does.
Yeah.
So now all we're living and we don't know what to do with each other. We can't even socialize with each other. We can't even talk to each other. It's such a big deal when I see people my age and we're sitting there talking. It's just such a big thing. It's like, oh, this is so retro. It's like, no, we're happy to see each other. And what's going on, girl? And what are you doing? That's what you're doing. You know, stop with this whole, like, I don't do much anymore. I don't do, no, that's the problem. It's like, because we don't have the handbook to know what to do with ourselves at this age. You know what I mean? So, it's, you know, what do? We all become leather boy, leather men, and we all hang up in leather clubs. And like, come on. Like, I'm not putting it down, but it's just kind of like, oh, we become bears or we become like, it's like, it's funny. You know what I mean? It's like, no, well, that black queen girl, you know, where do I fit?
Right. Yeah. Like I feel like I'm going to be now I'm like, I'm more in the comic. I mean, I create a lot of characters who are essentially drag queens and kings, but just they talk and they're sketch comedy, but like, and I do stand up and other types of, and I'm like, when am I going to ever stop? Like people have been like, oh, so you do things. My own dad was like, well, you try it for a minute. And if you don't make it, you got to quit. I'm like, what? I'm going to be doing this. I'm just going to be doing this until my walker. Like, this is just what I do. Like, that's just baseline of like what I do.
Right. Right. Exactly. And that's okay. It's fine. It's okay. That's what I've decided to do. This is what I am. This is who I am. This is what it is.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I do feel I feel like as I get older, I feel like more, I feel the looks of people like, well, shouldn't you, isn't this time to quit? Because people start dropping off, as you know, like people, everyone starts out and then like years go by.
Yeah. And what? I'm sorry. I'm so sorry that you felt the need to do what you have to do for yourself. And bravo for you for that decision. But that's not my story, honey. I'm not done. And if I'm done, I'm done, girl. You know what I mean? Girl, your word, what? Your meaning of done and my meaning of done are two different things, girl.
Yep. I love that. I'm going to have that put on a tattooed. I'm not done.
But it's true. It's like done. No, girl. I'm not done yet, girl. I'm still cooking, girl. And I never felt like this before. So allow me to feel like this and allow me to have that. Like, allow me to have to have a new experiences. Allow me to have new things happen to me. You know what I mean? Allow me to be 55 or 54, whatever I am, and just be who I am. People say, you look so good. I'm like, girl, I don't look anything like I did when I was a kid. That's fine. I'm done. Yeah, I look good. Yeah, I think I look good. I mean, a little more beat, fine. I feel good.
Yeah.
And if I didn't feel good, then I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing. I still would be doing it, though.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And how do you deal with, like, being misunderstood as an artist? You know, having some people get it.
That's why you're an artist, right? If you're not misunderstood, then you're definitely not an artist. I mean, come on. Okay. I mean, that's rocket science, girl. I mean, it's just like, you know. It's about putting your eggs in a row, and this is what you do. It's collecting those things, and that's how you do that. And that's where you get them the little list, then you give them, that's what I can do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And allow me to be, allow me to come out of that box. You know what I mean? Allow me to do new stuff too. That's where I have a problem. They're not even willing to listen to the new stuff unless you're, I mean, I was trying to get new stuff out of there, and you know, it's funny now that I am on, I guess, the tip on people's tongues, I guess, or with the whole Beyonce thing, and that's really fab. And I, trust me, girl, I'm going to take it and run. But I am very, it makes me laugh because before this past year happened, it was really hard. It was really hard to get through. It was really so struggling with people and my purpose and what I was doing, you know what I mean? And now it's like, oh, you want to hear this stuff now? Okay, well, ba-da, here it is. Thank you, Jesus, girl.
You're like, I've been doing, like, well, people will be like, oh, all of a sudden something good happens. And they're like, oh, that happened out of nowhere. And you're like, I haven't stopped doing this one day.
It just makes me laugh. I'm sorry. But it is different. It is way different. Back then, I felt like I was running. I felt like I was in this, like a mouse inside of a, some sort of fucking, like, okay, girl, okay, I'm walking, you know? It's a little bit difficult, so. Yes, I have. Thank you. You know what I mean? The humbleness that comes across. That has to happen, and that has to happen ASAP, because you have to be ready. You've got to be ready. You know what I mean? Because you never know with someone touch your life. And that lets you know exactly that humans touch each other and things happen. You know what I mean? Human connection is so important with people and what you do with yourself. You know what I mean? It's like, there's very few people who are out here that don't need nobody. Mm-hmm. Elon Musk, they need people. You know, you need people. You people need people. You can't do it without people. You know what I mean? So you gotta, you can be avant-garde, original, freaky, Friday looking, whatever. Da, 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 da. You still need people.
Yeah. Well, I get frustrated when it's like, it feels that people are, they are respond to the lowest common denominator situation or the environment in which you put out art now, which I find you put out things online, it just like, where's the complex? Where's the the stuff that is multi-layered and edgy in a way that it's just gone? Where is it?
So, for instance, I don't know if you saw my new cover of my new single, and it's called Body. We're going through the same thing you just said. And I just went, well, then I'm going to have to go there. I'm going to have to go there, like, go beyond my fantasies and go beyond. If I'm putting an image out there, then I have to go beyond and not be worried about aesthetically if they can get that real time. Mm-hmm. Like, that was my whole thing. And I was saying, because I have a problem with airbrushing and all that stuff. So I said, you know what? I want to go there. Make this picture go as crazy as possible. And let's, I had some inspiration from seeing other artists stuff that I was doing some research on. The Queens that sub. So I found this person that, Pierre, what's his last name? Anyway, so this queen, did these multiple layers of their arms and limbs, and they were like sex pictures, sex pose pictures, and they were very sex positive in the sense of like, that what she's wearing, what he's wearing, she's wearing, and it comes about, when he was done with his art, he killed himself because he was just done. And when you see these pictures, you're like, wow, like, how did this person back in 19, whatever, find, one of these multi-layered limbs and stuff, and then puts this face on it, like, you're just this alien. And I was just like, we're so, all the AI stuff is going on right now, and the eye and how we perceive things now is not so normal to what we did back in the day, It's like our eyes are really trained now we can't look at things normal anymore because we don't even know what normal is. So that's why I have a problem with what's going on in the world with all these Republicans and killings. And your eye is so different now. Why do you want to still be the same? Why do you have this flash on people that were making us go backwards? I just don't understand. It's like people, they want to hold on. They want to hold on so much to the past. And what they're doing is just they're not opening up that there's so much in the future. They are so many in the future, and they're holding on to the past. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
In the Jetsons are right here in front of you, and you're still sitting in the Walston. I don't get it.
Yeah, and it's like it's kind of too late. Like a lot of these things, I'm like it's too late. It's the kids are off and running. They're like way past this.
Okay, so I ran into somebody that was very ambiguously looking, like I didn't know whether they were black, white, green, yellow. I didn't know what race they were. I didn't know. So I went to this guy, and I said, we started talking, we hit off really well, and I was just like, listen, what's your nationality? He goes, why? And I go, because I can't figure you out. Why are you trying to figure me out? And I said, because he said, listen, I'm African-American. I said, really? How? He said, I am. He told me why he wasn't, but he was. And I was like, okay. But he looked like he was from Martinique or like Panama or something. I didn't know. Something was just very, just like this thing about him that was so, I'd never seen before. And then I realized, I said, well, that's what these new kids look like, these new babies that are out there. Oh, babies, you can't, they're so beautiful. You don't know whether they're male, female, or it's, they're just these balls of just energy. And they walk around with their iPads and they're just like calm. I'm like, wow. Where's the screaming babies at? They're no more screaming babies. These babies are like, you give them the iPad and they're done. Like, they're like,
shh. Yeah.
So there's a big change in just human development, I think, the way humans are, you know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know where we're going with this conversation, but it's cute.
But I think that's it's like about the environment in which we're creating it. And then it feels in that environment, I feel like it's just the way that you put out art 5 minutes ago is different how you're going to put out art 10 minutes from now.
Yeah, because you know what? No one has the, you know, I think what it is that we're so used to critiquing or seeing someone else's art as that art, you know. No, they're going to see our art, and I don't know what the era, what they're calling our era or what they're calling it, but it's going to have a name, and we're all going to be part of it because we're all similar to each other, and we're all doing that thing for this time, especially when it comes to performance. You know, performance has, you know, has its roots in New York, so, you know, that's, you could be a drag queen or you want to, but the fact of the matter, the drag is performance art. You know what I mean? So that's during the time of what's going on right now, especially now with the world trying to silence us. It's a call to action. You know what I mean? So very political, very political. And that's art.
Yeah. And when you're making, especially with your last single, like, do you have people telling you business on the business side, telling you no, that you can't do it?
I used to have people on the business side. Yes. They, in the beginning, yes. Now, no. They're like, more. Like, it's not even a question. Before, earlier in my life, yes. Tell it, dictating to me. You can't.
No.
Now, no. They're trusting me with all of it. Yeah.
Well, do you demand that? Do you demand it before you work with someone?
I've always demanded it, but I've not always gotten it. But sometimes you sign your name to the devil, they have to, you know, they dictate to you exactly how you're going to be put out there. And that's, I mean, that you can tell that from my first album to second album. First album, you can tell I had control. Second album, I did not have control. And it was really like hard for me to give it up. But I learned so much through that time. I learned some stuff. I learned things I've never learned before. So that's, you know, when you are not one that has the education stay of college and all that stuff. I'm thirsty for it. So you have to take your education the way you can take it. You know what I mean? So that was the major learning thing for me, be signing to, with Tony Moran and then, Nick DiBiase for, that album.
Yeah. And what would you tell someone who's in that situation where they're like, you know, getting success and having these business people start dictating, this is how it's got to be.
Keep yourself together. People make decisions that they're always going to, you know, go with yours, or they're not going to see your vision completely. Not that you made a wrong decision, it's that you have to get something out of it, no matter what it is, maybe monetarily or spiritually, or just getting education or being around. Put yourself around everything and make sure you learn it. You know what I mean? Because that's your time to realize you do. If you don't learn those things, then how are you going to know whether it was wrong or right? You know what I mean? You have to, you can't be an artist and not learn. You have to learn something from it. You know what I mean? That's how you process, progress to be better than you were from, say, the first piece of work you put out. You know what I mean? So they have to see it, the progression and how it's going to be. You can do the same thing, but progress in a way that, you know, it becomes a matter of fact and it becomes of nature, second nature, and less of a, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah. That makes it. And you've been, so much of what you've done, I feel like you create art that's like on the cusp and like captures a moment. Like some of your songs, I'm like, this is like listening to some of your music again. I was like, this feels like I feel like I'm in the inside of the tunnel. Like it just captures that, whatever it's made, it captured that feeling. And like, I mean, who knows how you do it, but how do you, like, what do you think is contributes to your ability to do that?
Beating it. Like, mm-hmm. that don't bring out the being the soundtrack for it, but I'm up in it, girl. Trust me. I'm in it. Like I'm in it, girl. Trust me. Tell you. So, you know, it's not just only my experience, but my DNA, you know what I mean? It's in me, you know, I absorb it all so much. So
yeah.
Music has such a way of making you be that ear too. You know, you could absorb so much. It just, music is very powerful. Very powerful tool. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, it's magic because it's not my skill set. So when people are able to do it, I'm like, oh, that, I don't know what you did, but you made the thing. And then I'm feeling, and I don't know what you did. It's super cool. So we always ask everyone their misfit moment, the moment when you realize that the traditional world was not for you. You're like, onward!
I think my moment was when... I think all my moments are misfits because they've never been really done before by anybody. So there's this moment where I remember being in Washington, D.C., and this is doing the March on Washington, doing the AIDS quilts, you know, doing that whole time. I was doing Conti. And I literally jumped off the stage and walked down Constitution Avenue and performing the whole time.
For blocks.
And I came back and then went back and got back on the stage. That was a misfit moment for me. Another misfit moment would be, that was a misfit moment. I mean, I love that moment. I guess performing at the stadium in Montreal for Black and Blue, like several times. Like, that was like, cause you only do that gig like once. And I've done that gig like maybe five times. So that was like, you know, and that was the thing about me. Like, where people would have one time being there, I would be there like two or three times. Mm. So that would be like, you know, kind of because of the way it was, you know what I mean? It was just like, we got Kevin to perform, you know what I mean? It was, that's how effective, I guess I was. And just like, so I would always go back and see pro friends, or, you know, I would see people that I make friends with, and it would be, and the reason I would see them because I had a gig there. So I would go back to cities all the time and perform Boston, Montreal, all over Japan, you know, so that was really great. And, you know, and my thing was like, well, you know, you're always a bit younger, prettier, you know, better music than it coming out. And there were people coming out, but mm-mm. It was always mm-hmm. me, you know. I just kept going mm-hmm. and just kind of like, you know, I love anything new and fresh. So I love new stuff, fresh stuff. So I'm mm-hmm. very supportive of new artists and everything. So
how? I mean, a stadium. How do you come down from that? Because the energy that's being put back.
It's a stage. It's just a stage. Yeah. You know. So you know, you don't really know the numbers until you actually have already done it. So you just kind of like do it. Now with all the Beyonce stuff and seeing what she's doing and with those stadiums and stuff like that, it's just amazing to see this woman perform and doing what she does and to be able to like be part of that, you know. It's amazing. So yeah.
But I mean, because you're up there and then you feel like, do you feel the energy of the whole stadium? Like,
you feel the energy, but the lights are on you. So you don't really, you can't really see at all. You know what I mean? Recently, mm-hmm. when I did the same thing, and I did their Gay Pride, and I was there with Bag of Chips, what's her name? No, Rita Bagup. Rita had all these RuPaul girls come on. And so I got to open up for all those girls and DJ for that section. So the stadiums are like empty, and then all of it is packed. By the time my set's finished, the place is packed. And so I gag because there's so many people there. But as you know, it's their Gay Pride. So it's kind of incredible when the girls come on. But it's really interesting to be in that room with all those people. I mean, a lot of people. I mean, yeah. I mean, 100 people is a lot of people for me. But when you get into the 100,000, it's like 10,000. Yeah. It's just like, whoa, that roar is incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. It's like, I get juiced after, you know, 100 people in a room. Like I have trouble going to sleep the next day. But honestly, 20 people in a really good audience, I like it, just that juice from people really vibing with your material. is really, it makes it hard for me to, I can't imagine after a stadium. I wouldn't sleep for days.
My thing that comes about me is depression afterward, because the artist depression, that whole like you're riding high and then you get low because you do your next piece of work, you know? And that's the rough part for me. There's just the performance downs. So I have to like literally put myself in the bed and just like, okay, I'm gonna be down for a couple of days, but I have to be working on the next one, you know?
Well, that brings us to our misfit inspiration. Cheesy sound effects. I love it. When you're in those downs, like what, you're in bed, is there any like, you know, book, movie, quote, anything that you go to for that
You have to get yourself in a mode of taking other art. You have to get yourself in the mode of taking other things in, whether it's reading, whether it's magazines, whether whatever you need, you have to start filling yourself with that stuff. Because then once the cup is running over, then you can do it again. So you have to do the work. The work is important. If you know you get depressed, you know you did that, don't just lay in bed, the artist. Like, come on, go paint something. Go paint. Don't paint anything. Write something. Do something opposite of what you do. Mm-hmm. That's I think is important. I think it's very important to constantly always you put out. You got to put something back in. It's very important.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. And so I have a question from one of my characters. So you'll meet her without her usual accoutrement. Her name's Cynthia. She's from Westchester. Well, she'll tell you the rest. Okay. Hi. Oh, it's been a day, Kevin. I don't know you, but I've listened to you while tweaking very hard at the tunnel on a combination of Molly, Special K, and Zima. Like I try to tell those kids, we tripped so hard. We were the first one to bend over in that dance floor cage. Am I right? All right, Kevin. I just feel so bad for these kids. I feel like I just have a question for them. Like, are they irresponsible? You know, we had places where we could be absolutely irresponsible. And so, I wonder though, you know, sometimes it was fun. Sometimes we had a little bit too much fun. But what would you recommend to the kids today? They're choosing meditation over tweaking often. I feel like maybe they're missing the boat sometimes. So what would you recommend to the kids? Should they loosen up?
You know what I think? What I think was we didn't have what they have. And I think if we had that back in those days, we wouldn't have been doing what we were doing. So they have a thing called a phone. We don't have a lot of documentation on what we actually look like back in those days.
Thank goodness. Oh, my God.
So these kids, this phone thing has made them very responsible in a sense of like, you know, kind of like not being a mess. So we were messy back in those days, don't you think? We were a little messy.
Oh, my God. I was fingering Molly Ringwald in the go-go cage. But listen, I'm just wondering now, like, are they going to, like, is that going to inhibit them? We were messy. We were wrong. Now you can be caught on tape doing that. It's a different, do you feel that they're missing out on something?
No, I don't feel they're missing out, because it's just the generational thing. So it's just that it's making people come more correct, I think. You know, we weren't really correct during those days. You know what I mean? There was this freedom, but yet some of us was borderline rude, girl. I mean, borderline just like not being very nice.
Well, yeah, there's a little bit, or hygienic sometimes. I mean, right.
So I don't think they're doing anything wrong. I think they're exactly where they need to be. Yeah.
I think, you know, that's so great. I get a little bit hard on my son, you know. I give him, it was 16th birthday and I brought him Cello shots and he didn't want them. And I was like, by your age, I'd already been to rehab after 2 DUIs and 3 abortions. I was like, yeah. But perhaps it could have saved me some heartache and a divorce, you know, a divorce. I had a, you know, made some bad decisions during that, all of that.
And so how do you feel about Cynthia? Do you feel, rest is cute, right? Sleeping is nice.
Sleeping is nice. It is. That's bad. Well, I need to get a little Ambien these days, but you know. All right, Kevin, you're a peach. I love you.
I've tripped so hard to you for so many years. I feel like I know you intimately, deep in my pussy. So
oh my God, you're funny. I love it.
Cynthia love it. Is crazy. I have a big boobs. I stuff my butt. I have a big wig. And then I bring people up on stage and I do a role play. It gets really wild with her.
Jeez. It is. Wow. Wow. It reminds me, you know, I had a really great book growing up and it was called Sybil. Mm-hmm. I love this book so much. I know it sounds really strange, but this book was just like wild to me. When I was a young kid, I got this book and I just like, it just was such a scandal to read. Like such a scandal to read. Like I was just like, it was crazy. I read this book. It was like really thick. And it didn't have that many characters. She had like 40 some different characters. They're people. But they only talked about like 12 of them. And this book was just like, wow. I was like, wow. Woman was like intense. So, you know, I kind of love it when I meet somebody that can actually do characters. You know what I mean? I love that.
Well, you're creating characters in your drag persona.
Yeah, I do. But she's always the same ballhead black queen, though. Like, you're always the same Eminem eating bitch, girl.
I love it. Well, it certainly brings so much like light to the world. So like, the world is a brighter place.
The world. It's so funny. The world today is, I feel like, you know, you're in history class and you see all the stuff that's happened in history, right? And they're like some earthquakes or whatever. Earthquakes or just like life, this little thing. And then you're actually living it. Because life is just a bunch of things together that you live and you document and then you experience things and it's just the way things are. You know what I mean? Yeah. But you realize you're like, okay, this is what a normal day in the world happens is things change. It's just that every day is different. You know, not because history is being made. It's just, that's just life.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah, I read the Elsa Schiaparelli autobiography because I went to see her exhibit in Paris when I was there, and it was like insane. It was so good, and I read her book, and she was like a boss lady, and she was just so dedicated to her art. But the thing was interesting is like she was writing during World War II, and like it's like exactly like you're saying, it wasn't like she's living life. She's trying to run a business, and then this war happens, and then she's trying to figure out life. And it's all these moments. It's very different when it's lived, you know.
Right.
It's the day to day. Cool. So, Kevin, where can people come find you and hang out with you? And
well, right now I'm on my tour, on the Conti Ball tour, and I am pretty much piggybacking on the Beyonce tour, her tour. So I'm doing all these unofficial parties after her party, so after her concert. So. I just did one in Atlanta, and I did one for Saturday night which was a success. I'll be in Fort Lauderdale this weekend, and then a week after that, I'll be in Vegas. So
yeah, so cool. I mean, super cool. The coolest of the cool. So excited for you and everything that's coming. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
There we have it. You can follow Misfits Making It on my social pages at Lauren Logi on all the things, Instagram especially, and also X Twitter thing and Threads and TikTok and YouTube Shorts and all the things. You can get updates and inside info by joining my email list at www.laurenlogi.com. Thank you to Ani Makutsian for editing, Edward Sheila at Radio Misfits Podcast Network, and Maddie McLennan for making the podcast. And thanks to our listeners for bringing us back for another season. We'll see you soon.
The proceeding was a presentation of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Find our other great shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at RadioMisfits.com. Thank you.